Brian Reynolds, president of the Rotary Club of San Luis Obispo. On behalf of the other four Rotary Clubs around, which will be thanked individually, like, I'm so glad you're here, and especially thank the League of Women Voters. Just very briefly, why Rotary? It's because we serve. And we serve in a particular way tonight to help people get acquainted with the issues of the day, help them govern themselves better. And coming up next month is Youth Services Month. Rotary divides the year into 12. And I think it's an example that we can show, concrete, tangible, current example of what needs to be done to our younger generations. So thank you so much, and away we go.
Thank you for that. So welcome to the candidate forum for District 4. This forum has been made possible by a number of Rotary Clubs. So I'm going to name them. We've got the Rotary Club, San Luis Obispo Monday Club, the Rotary Club de Tolosa, the Daybreak Rotary of San Luis Obispo, Passport Rotary of San Luis Obispo, and the Cambria Rotary. So thank you all very much for making this forum possible. Welcome to our candidates, Mr. Jimmy Paulding, Mr. Adam Verdin. Thank you so much for participating tonight. Appreciate it. And thank you to all of you for taking the time to be here and take part in something that's really essential to be as an informed and engaged electorate. We're going to learn a lot tonight from these gentlemen. My name is Shelley Higginbotham. I am tonight's moderator. I'm a member of the San Luis Obispo League of Women Voters. The League is a nonpartisan political organization focused on voter education, empowering voters, and defending democracy. Did you know that the League of Women Voters offers nonpartisan election, an election resource called vote411.org? And this is a one-stop shop for election information that provides San Luis Obispo County voters with simple, accessible tools to help them navigate the voting process. All of the candidates have been invited to enter their information about themselves and their priorities. You can type in your address, see what's on your ballot, check your registration, find your polling place, and much, much more. So that's vote411.org. So both the candidates have signed an MOU outlining the format for tonight, and they have agreed to the best practices in civil discourse. I'm counting on you, the audience, to do the same. I would respectfully ask that you refrain from applause or outbursts. This can throw off the candidates when they're trying to answer questions, and it delays the forum, and we would like to get as many questions answered as possible. Tonight, the panelists will have a 3-minute opening statement, and then they will have a minute and a half to answer each question. We have many League volunteers throughout the building, and with cards and pencils, so please write your questions down. They'll bring it up to the sorting table. Please refrain from coming up yourself. It gets busy. You can raise your hand, and we'll try to get those picked up. We probably will not get to every question, but we will try to get as many answered as possible. The forum is live streamed on AGP and will be shown on Slow Span, Channel 20, and the League of Women Voters will later stream it on our website. Couple housekeeping, check those phones, make sure they're silenced. In the case of an emergency, this is the flight attendant piece, exit doors are here, and two in the back, and those are the restrooms. So with that, we did a little coin toss, and Mr. Paulding won that coin toss, so he will start with the opening statement. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. I had to make sure that my cell phone was turned off as well.
Thank you.
Well, first I want to extend my appreciation to the San Luis Obispo County League of Women Voters and all of the Rotary Clubs that participated in making this happen today, and all of the volunteers that are working here today. We really appreciate you creating this opportunity for our South County community to come together and talk about the future of our community. I think we're all here because we care deeply about South County and San Luis Obispo County. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Jimmy Paulding. I am your 4th District County Supervisor. I've been serving on the Board of Supervisors for 3.5 years. Before that, I served on the Arroyo Grande City Council for 4 years and grew up in this community. Graduated from Arroyo Grande High School, where I played football, met my lovely wife, Kendra, who's here today at Cal Poly, and worked in planning and construction management for about 12 years, ultimately going to law school, starting a law practice where I do estate planning and small business succession planning, and then got into politics, and have really enjoyed serving as your county supervisor. My top priority has always been public safety, and we have some notable achievements here in South County working together. One of those was securing $14 million to move the long-awaited Napomo Sheriff Substation project forward. That'll be under construction next year. Another was implementing our fire department strategic plan to ensure that we have 3 firefighters, not 2, but 3, on each of our fire engines. And we started in Napomo, the first unincorporated community in Slo County, that we were able to upgrade and meet that national standard. Another top priority has been homelessness, and because of the great work that the County Board of Supervisors, our staff, our wonderful partners in the community have been doing, we've seen a 42% reduction in unsheltered homelessness, and we made mental health a top priority when I joined the board. That led to a strategic plan and a gaps analysis, and ultimately securing $22 million to build a new facility that will provide beds for youth, which is one of our major gaps in this community. And so I have demonstrated a track record of delivering results for South County, but also working for everybody in San Luis Obispo County. And so as I advocate for the needs in South County and for my voters, I'm also keenly aware that the work that I do to balance the budget, to ensure fiscal responsibility, to prioritize the needs of our community from a standpoint of good governance, matters to all of us. I will say, in times past, the Board of Supervisors was known for its partisan bickering. We changed that culture. We now have a culture of working together, building consensus, and getting things done. And so I really hope that I can count on your support for another 4 years. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
Hi there. Well, I'm Adam Verdin. I also grew up here, went to school here. Grew up actually working in our family restaurant, Old Juan's Cantina. This year we celebrate 50 years in business. My sister's here tonight, and she and I have been running the restaurant now for the last 16 years. And there's one way I can really mess up this whole night, and that's if I don't acknowledge my wife, Mary, because this week we've been married for 24 years.
Okay, you can clap.
And so we raised our 2 boys here. I grew up here, as I say. I learned to fly there at the Oceano Airport. I sold it on my 16th birthday, my private on my 17th, and out of high school, I was a flight instructor. And aviation, for me, really changed my life. It created a different trajectory than I otherwise would have had. I ultimately ended up going to law school here, became an attorney here, and have been deeply involved in various aspects of community efforts, sitting on, I think, boards in organizations and nonprofits that do a lot and make a lot of difference for people that, frankly, may not have an opportunity to be here tonight with all of us because they're working, they're raising their kids, and all of that. So thank you very much for being here. Thank you, Shelley. Thank you for the League of Women Voters, and thank you to all the Rotarians who put this together. I understand you guys were here at 4 o'clock today setting chairs up and doing all of that, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Verdin. So we're going to rotate the order of the questions. So, Mr. Verdin, this question is for you. When and what motivated you to run for public office?
Well, some people say it's because I lost my mind. but no, I think it's been a slow progression of being involved in the community. And you know, it's, you know, when I sit on boards, nonprofits, or whatever I'm doing, I really try to make an impact. And so one of the, you know, I just told you a little bit about my background, but that was really a we effort. So me, who I am today is really a result of the opportunities of where we live and the people that have helped me and have mentored me. And I think that it's incumbent on us to do what we can to create those opportunities for the next generation that's here. And that's really the prime motivation for me. I have a great job, great business, great wife, great life, and I would call this a little bit disruptive to all of that, but it's very meaningful for me to be here and run for office.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, would you like me to repeat the question?
I think I got it. Thank you so much. Why did I run for office? Well, it started, I would guess, with my parents. I was raised in an environment with a teacher my mom was a teacher. My dad was a police officer with San Luis Obispo PD. My sister later became a teacher and a professor. So public service really is in the family. It's in my blood. And as I mentioned earlier, I worked a career as a planner and project manager in the planning and construction industry, but later decided I wanted to go to law school because I wanted to do more. And many of us in my law class would raise our hands when asked, you know, are you here because you want to change the world? Yes, absolutely, right? And it was a conversation with Congresswoman Lois Capps that actually led to me deciding to run for office at the local level. And I had followed the Board of Supervisors and kind of where things were and felt like I could really bring some change to the board and get it redirected on focusing on our community and the challenges that we face. And I think that we've been doing a good job at that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Paulding, next question. What would your priorities be for District 4? And please include public safety.
Well, public safety is my top priority. And in addition to public safety, I like to just share the priorities that I've supported as a supervisor. And those actually influence the budget decisions that our board makes, because our budget is ultimately a reflection of the values of the Board of Supervisors. And so public safety is right up there. Fiscal responsibility is up there. We talk about homelessness, but obviously moving the needle, going beyond the 42% achievement and meeting our target of 50% and hopefully one day functional zero. Mental health is on our top board priority list and one of my priorities. Infrastructure and storm recovery. Many of you may recall in 2023, we experienced some serious storms that wiped out a lot of our roads and infrastructure. We had $70 million worth of impact to our community, and so we've been going through the process of seeking reimbursement from the federal government through FEMA to repair all of that. So infrastructure is definitely a priority. Water security for our future, working on this big desal project that I'm sure we'll talk about today. And then housing, workforce and affordable housing are critical issues, and I hope that we have that question today so I can talk about my record on that issue. Those are some of my top priorities. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Paulding. Mr. Verdin.
Yeah. So, of course, public safety. But I would also say that the challenge for us and the challenge of the day is housing. People self-help housing, which create affordable housing for folks in this county and in other places as well, you know, they say that they have about 9,700 people on the waiting list. Now, the prior quarter, it was just north of 7,000. And so that isn't a great statistic. I sit on the Five Cities Homeless Coalition Board. Right? We have about 500 people on our waiting list. We have friends, people that I know that are really having a hard time finding a place to rent. And it's a really challenging issue because everyone acknowledges that we need workforce housing and that we need housing of all types, but no one wants traffic that's associated with it. And so it's a tough puzzle, but yet we owe it to our kids, our next generation, so that if they want to be able to live here and work here, they can afford to do so. And it touches all aspects of our community. It touches folks that are elderly, that can't find doctors. They can't find doctors among those reasons. It's expensive to live here. So affordability and tackling the housing issue I view that as the biggest, toughest, and probably the most important challenge that we have in front of us.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin. How will you work to solve the homelessness problem with the current budget concerns?
Well, I think it's one thing that we all need to recognize. You know, there's a lot of pushback on the homeless issue in terms of spending government money on it. But I'd like for everyone to understand this, that it touches a lot of aspects of society. So if we, as an example, don't support the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, if we don't support CAPSLO or ECHO, then that means we're relying on law enforcement to deal with really what are social and socioeconomic issues. So I think supporting that is one piece of it. But then the other part of that is you have to have a place for people to live ultimately in long-term housing. And that's a supply problem. So you have to make it easier to get things done here. You have to make it easier to build things. And then you have to have the supportive infrastructure to do it.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, this certainly has been an issue that I've been passionate about and have served on the Homeless Services Oversight Council, where we have faith leaders, business leaders, city partners, law enforcement, you name it, on that council, people with lived experience. And we've been moving the needle in the right direction, as I mentioned, seeing the 42% reduction in unsheltered homelessness. And so the question is, what is working and what isn't working? And I will say right now that I believe providing more beds for people, more shelter, is critical. We've seen the success of what the Five Cities Homeless Coalition has done here in South County with their Cabins for Change and Baleco on Barker projects. 50 beds. I like to share the story of a guy named Joey that I met at the Stone Soup Festival. He came up to me and he said, I'm homeless at this time, but I might want help in the future. He later reached out to my office, connected him with Five Cities Homeless Coalition. They put him in their case management program. He got housed in one of their facilities. He texted me a couple months back saying, hey, Jimmy, FYI, I'm now sober and I have a permanent home in Morro Bay. The success work, or it's there. We know the models that work. We're actually building another one of these facilities on the Johnson Health Campus in SLO, known as the Welcome Home Village, a 3D printed tiny home community. It also takes outreach, and that's what we've been focusing on to help people with addiction issues and their underlying mental health issues as well. And so that's the formula. We need to continue to keep doing more of that, and I will be proud to do that in my second term. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you're still up here, Mr. Paulding.
All right.
Do you agree with the leasing or selling the LeGrand tract of the Oceano Dunes SVRA to California State Parks?
Well, I'm going to take a step back to provide a little bit of context. Who here knows what the LeGrand tract is? Anyway, probably some of you, but not others. Essentially, we have the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area. Out there, there's about 500 acres of land that the county owns of essentially sand dune, which is currently part of the off-highway riding area, off OHV riding area. And so the question is, what should the county do with that land? And there have been many, many discussions over decades around what the best use of that land is, whether we should sell it to state parks or lease it to state parks. The key is that there are so many, there's quite a lot of complexity as it relates to the environmental issues, the public health issues, air quality, the economic issues, recreational issues. And the county, if it's going to give up that piece of land, which happens to be one of the key dust controls for the dust mitigation that we're doing to improve the air quality on the Napomo Mesa, we're going to have to get something in exchange. And so I can't tell you what the board is actually discussing now because it's discussed in closed session because it's a confidential real estate transaction with California State Parks. But what I will say is that we're asking for a lot of things, and it may end up being the case that we enter into an operating agreement where they pay the county money to lease that land or that we eventually sell it. But the fate of that property is uncertain at this point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
Yeah, I think we should be talking to state parks about it. There was an interest in it some years ago from state parks. I understand they have an interest in acquiring it now. It represents really a missed opportunity to have that land there that's being actually used by state parks and not being organized or structured in a way that fully benefits us. Supervisor Paulding said that they're asking a lot, and they should. We should get a lot for it because right now we're not getting anything for it. Also, the Oceano Dunes represents a huge economic driver for our region, not just Pier Avenue, but for our entire region, $500 million in total economic contribution. And so we should do what we can to preserve it and to keep it going as is.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin. Do you support the continuation of Prop 13?
I support the continuation of Prop 13 in all of its forms, the property protection side and the two-thirds side protection of Prop 13. I think it's important on the two-thirds side that if you're going to, my view is, and some people in this room I know disagree with it, but my view is that if you're going to raise your taxes on a neighbor, you should be able to get a supermajority to do it, or better, more than a 50-50.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Yes, I emphatically support Proposition 13, all of the protections, both for homeowners and businesses. And as it relates to the two-thirds threshold issue, when this issue came before the Board of Supervisors, it was in the context of our legislative platform, which is the platform we use to take positions on state legislation or federal legislation. And there was ACA1, which was essentially a bill that would lower the threshold from 66% to 55% for certain local bond measures related to infrastructure. And so what I did as a supervisor is I advocated that we take a neutral position on that. And that's what we reflected in our legislative platform. Well, that is being spun now as me being against Proposition 13, specifically the homeowner protections. I too am a homeowner. I enjoy the 1% cap, would not want to see that changed. And so I hope that helps inform you as you go to vote, because there is quite a lot of misinformation out there about this point. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Paulding. How are we going to add thoughtful growth and housing, but also protect the environment for our small towns when developers are pushing the limits and cities are saying their hands are tied?
Love that question. Who wrote that question? That was a good one. All right, we got hands raised. Okay, well, this issue is complicated because the state of California is, through its regional housing needs allocation process, telling cities and counties how much housing we have to plan and permit for. Not build, because cities and counties don't build the housing, but we have to plan and permit it. And if we don't, then they take away our local control, which is a really big problem. We're seeing that play out here in the city of Rio Grande with the recent project over there off of Oak Park, where the city council's hands were essentially tied. And so I will absolutely push back on that. I have always been a proponent of local control, especially in the context of what the state's trying to do right now. I've heard a number that they're asking for the next 8 years that we build 17,000 housing units in SLO County. I just don't know that we have the land for that. And in many cases, we don't have the water and sewer infrastructure to support that. I've taken a very balanced view of housing. I think we need the infrastructure, services, and facilities to support that housing. And so in Napomo, for example, I've advocated to update the long-range plan to make sure that we're tackling those issues as well as providing infill housing. And that's the key for me. For housing our police officers, our firefighters, our teachers, our actual workforce, we need more multifamily housing. But it needs to be in infill locations. I don't want to see us sprawl out into our agriculture, into our open spaces, into the scenic and wonderful, you know, paradise that we essentially enjoy here. That's why we live here. So we need a balanced approach on housing. And that's also why I don't take any money from real estate developers.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
Let's see. Can you repeat the question again?
I sure can. Yeah. How are we going to add thoughtful growth and housing, but also protect the environment of our small towns when developers are pushing the limits and cities are saying their hands are tied?
Well, I think we all need to remember that in San Luis Obispo County, roughly two-thirds of our land we probably can't develop. Either there are national monuments or state parks. The terrain is such that you can't develop it. But I think there are some areas that it makes sense that you can, and you can build. And I think that we shouldn't be so resistant to that. Again, I cited earlier stats today that gives you the magnitude of the problem. And I would argue that we're not in balance right now, given the number of people that we have on our various waiting lists for housing, rental housing, and the rest of it. You know, I'd just like to touch on the developer donations. You know, my paradigm is that if you're accepting money or somebody is supporting you, they're doing it because they believe in you. But if your paradigm is that it's transactional, that really reflects on the person saying that, not on me.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, along these same lines of housing, how can we address the unaffordability of housing in San Luis Obispo County?
That's a tough issue. So, you know, Santa Barbara County did something interesting. They partnered with Cottage Hospital, and they created deed-restricted housing for folks in the medical field. So that touches on a specific need. Here in San Luis County, we have something, depending on who you talk with, it's about 150 to 200 primary physicians short of where we should be for our population. We're short of nurses, we're short physician assistants, medical technicians, and the rest of it. And so I think we could be strategic about how we approach this. I think it'd be interesting to look at our county lands, see what we do have available, analogous to the La Grande Tract, and say, hey, is there an opportunity here to partner with an industry or a segment of our community that's in need and create deed-restricted housing within the framework of county land? I think that's one way of doing it. Then the obvious thing is we need to make it easier to get things done here. Today, just today, I had three meetings with three different folks that were telling me how hard it is to get a permit to build a single family home. Not developers, just one, you know, individuals with a lot trying to build.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, what have we been doing for the last couple years? I can personally attest to the work that I've been involved in. I actually, because I care so much about affordable and workforce housing, signed up to be on an ad hoc committee. Okay, a task force, another committee, do they work? I know you're asking yourself those questions. This was with Supervisor Ortiz Legg, our planning staff, and with our nonprofit and for-profit housing builders. And what did we do? Well, we took the policies in our housing element of the general plan, which guides implementation of the housing planning and permitting that we do, and we developed a process, and we went through a number of meetings, biweekly meetings at one point, and we've adopted five different sets of policies. I'm not going to go into each one today. One of them actually encourages builders to pay into a fund that then goes to our nonprofit housing builders, which I think is really critical because our affordable and workforce housing numbers are what the state of California is mandating, and that's where we generally have been behind, although we are making progress, not on the big luxury homes. And I get some say, you know, it's a housing ladder and we need all the different types so you can move up the ladder, but we're constrained in terms of available land area. Another example is our pre-approved ADU program, accessory dwelling units, granny flats. You can now walk in over the counter and get a pre-designed set of plans to save you the cost of going through the process. And finally, we've actually reformed our planning and building department. We hired an outside consultant to do an audit and an operational assessment that gave us an implementation plan, and we're going through those steps to make that process work better for you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, do you support reopening the Oceano Fire Station? And if so, how would you fund it?
I love that question too. I'm not going to ask who asked that one, but let me give a little bit more context. So first and foremost, the voters in Oceano were struggling to pay for fire service, and two measures failed, one of them by 10 votes. And so as a county supervisor, I was faced with the problem of providing the same level of service, fire service, to the community of Oceano and to the five cities, because we all work together. We are better together. And so what I did is I advocated at the Board of Supervisors level for us to take over that responsibility and to pay $300,000 a year in general fund monies, property tax, funded tax, countywide taxpayers are essentially paying to help contract with the Five Cities Fire Authority to provide the same level of service. We actually added an additional fire engine at the Arroyo Grande Station with personnel that could then service the Oceano area. Moving forward, we want to implement the county's strategic plan that has two critical elements. One is making sure that all of our fire engines are staffed at three-person staffing, which is something I mentioned earlier. We've started in Napomo at the Inland Napomo Station, and the next one we're doing is the Napomo Mesa Station, again, the busiest stations in the unincorporated area. And then we also have to look to making sure that we have 3-0 staffing on all of our fire engines here in the five cities, so on the Five Cities Fire Authority engines as well. Next is we have a whole bunch of facilities, including one out East AG, a new fire station that we need to build. So looking at implementing all of those, Oceano should absolutely be on the top of the list. The question is funding, and I'm out of time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, do you support reopening the Oceano Fire Station, and how would you fund it?
Well, 100%. So the Oceano Fire Station started off as a volunteer fire station about 44 years ago. And then the Five Cities Fire Authority took it over. There were two funding measures through a property tax effort in Oceano, and I actually supported both of them. And I put my name on it and advocated for it, and as you were just told, it lost just by a little bit. I kind of wish that there were other folks out there that were advocating for it with us and supporting the community that way, but there really weren't. And so now we have a closed fire station there in Oceano, and we're going to have to figure out how to open it, how to fund it. One of the challenges in there is the station itself needs to be remodeled. And I think there is a very high price that came back to remodel. But again, this is the county government doing it. There are other ways of doing that. There are ways of engaging with nonprofits and private individuals to get the remodeling done. That might lower the cost of doing it. And then I think, you know, and in terms of funding it beyond that, I'm not exactly sure. Again, it's a puzzle that we need to fix, but it would absolutely be a priority.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, where do you stand regarding voter ID requirements?
Well, I think, look, voting is basic to who we are as Americans. It needs to be accessible. It needs to be fair. It needs to be reliable. And it needs to be somewhat verifiable. And so to the extent that we can achieve all of those three things, we should. And in terms of specific voter ID, I think it's reasonable for folks to be able to identify themselves when they're participating.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. I think the broader question implicated there is whether or not our local elections, our county elections, are safe and secure, and whether we can trust that process. And I absolutely trust Elena Cano, our county clerk recorder. In fact, I'll say it right now, I've endorsed her, and I hope that you will all vote for her. She's on the ballot come June 2nd. We need to use facts to make decisions around whether or not we have a safe and secure system. And what we've seen are recounts recently, locally, recounts that showed that there were zero discrepancies. In fact, I had a recount in my race. Supervisor Bruce Gibson had a recount in his race. And that was a very arduous process, one that is the public's right, and I will always encourage the public to engage in that right, but that showed there were zero discrepancies. And so for the folks out there that have concerns, I would encourage you to reach out to the county clerk recorder's office and understand the safeguards that are in place to protect the voting process, because it is really incumbent on all of us, especially local leaders, to let you know that this is a safe and secure process, and we should trust our elections. It is one of the most fundamental aspects of this democracy in this great country. As it relates to voter ID, I think a lot of the requirements that are being advocated for at the federal level are concerning and would affect, even in some cases, if a woman has married and changed their name, the fact that they would have to use a birth certificate can create complications. And so I think we need to look at these things very closely before we undertake these changes.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Paulding. The South County continues to face water concerns. What is your specific plan for water reliability, and how would you balance agriculture, housing, existing residents, and environmental needs?
In a minute and a half. Okay. Let's think about water like we think about finances. We need a diversified water portfolio. So that means protecting Lopez Lake. That reservoir provides water for 55,000 residents here in South County. It means protecting our groundwater and ensuring that we are all engaging in conservation at the levels that we need to. And we've done a great job in South County, so please do pat yourself on the back. It also means that we are looking out for future water supplies. And that's why I've led the initiative at the county to treat our ocean water. The Big Blue is right next door. And what we would do is install an ocean desalination plant on the Central Coast, somewhere on the coast, in order to make that happen. We're currently looking at a number of sites. One of them is the Phillips 66 oil refinery site, which is going through the decommissioning process. Another is the South County Sanitation District site, where they have an existing wastewater treatment plant and an outfall and other facilities. So in addition to this long-term project that's going to take us 15, 20 years working together with the seven cities, the community services districts, the county of Santa Barbara, to enjoy the economy of scale and realize, you know, the benefits of working together, we also need to pursue recycled water. And I was proud to lead the charge on the Central Coast Blue Recycled Water Project when I was an Arroyo Grande City Council member to treat wastewater, put it back in the ground, protect against salt water and seawater intrusion, and pump it back out. We need to make sure that we're talking together, working on solutions together, and that means the City Council of Arroyo Grande, of Grover Beach, Oceano Community Services District, and I will continue to lead in that way. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
So, one is, I think pursuing a long-term desal solution, like what was just mentioned, is very important, but it's also not just a long-term solution. It takes a long time to get there, and it's very expensive. Some estimates are somewhere between $200 and $300 million. I don't think that stops us from pursuing it, but we should understand that it's a very difficult thing to achieve. a couple of things, and I was kind of disappointed. I didn't see it as a possibility of one of the recommendations or the thought processes in the Public Works Department's report is Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. There you have existing diesel with excess capacity, but it's fully permitted. They have a grandfathered process that allows them to use that diesel where the newer requirements a little more expensive and arduous to achieve. There's also the possibility of connecting further with Santa Barbara County through a pipeline that runs underneath the Santa Maria Riverbed. Right now that is restricted kind of artificially at 3,200 acre feet, but the pipe itself has something like a 6,000 acre foot capacity. There is a gap with Golden State Water and Zone 3 water, our water, of about 50 to 100 feet that could be connected. And then you would have, as we were just talking about, a diversified water portfolio and the ability for mutual aid as well. So I think there's opportunity there short term, and of course the long term needs to be pursued.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, a minute and a half for this too. How do you attract head of household jobs to our county?
Well, I think you got to pay attention to it. So I met with a group of aerospace companies in San Luis Obispo. There are about five of them. And those five represent about $1.5 billion of revenue to our area. Their average wage for their employees was about $118,000 a year. Just one of those companies, one of them, they told me they had a $28 million payroll. And that $28 million payroll, 13 million of those of what represented of their workers live in Santa Maria or Orchid. And when you talk to them about what is the most important thing for you from a county government perspective to help you, they say two things. One is housing for our workforce. Two is it has to be easier to get our stuff built here. One of those businesses, and I won't say who it is, but they are looking at moving part of their facility into Santa Maria because they say they're just simply easier to work with. So I think we have to pay attention to them. We have to talk to them. By the way, when I met with them, they told me that I was the only person running for office right now that had sat down and asked them these questions. And so I think if you're listening out there, you're running for office or you're in office, I think we all need to pay attention to that aerospace industry.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, I think first and foremost, it is important to underscore the work that the County of San Luis Obispo is doing. And so we have a partnership with REACH, the Regional Economic Action Coalition. They're a two-county partnership, the County of Santa Barbara and SLO County, where we're working on a 2030 jobs plan to create those high-paying jobs for the Central Coast. And the primary clusters are aerospace, ag tech, that's agricultural technology, clean technology, precision manufacturing. And so there have been a number of wonderful partnerships struck in that regard. One example would be the partnership between ACI Jet, our fixed-based operator, the Cuesta College, and the County of San Luis Obispo to create a workforce development program that has really led to a number of local folks getting jobs as aircraft technicians. I actually ran into a woman the other day when I was walking and knocking doors, and she's like, "You got to meet my daughter. She went through the program, and it was great." So we need to do a lot more of that. I think, too, it's really critical to mention the partnership with Cal Poly. We have this wonderful university right in our backyard. It is my alma mater. I actually studied city and regional planning there. One of the reasons why I care so much about ensuring that the facilities, services, and infrastructure are there to keep pace with growth. But when we talk about Cal Poly, the County of San Luis Obispo has a financial partnership with their Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, as well as the Small Business Development Center. And that really does a great job at producing local jobs and local companies that create those local jobs. And so there's so much exciting work there. But the stop button is upon me, and so I'll stop. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, isn't part of the issue with the lack of medical professionals based on the designation of SLO County as rural, is there anything we can do to change that classification?
Absolutely. What we need to do is get a Congress that is actually functional. Anybody have any ideas to make that happen? Whatever happened to working together, working across the aisle and getting stuff done, which is, by the way, something we do at the Board of Supervisors. I was actually in Washington, D.C. recently meeting with Congressman Carbajal, Congressman Panetta, and Senator Adam Schiff to talk about this issue, among others. And Congressman Panetta has introduced legislation to change the Medicare reimbursement rates for local physicians and specialists to bring those up to represent the inflationary cost of living environment that we're in right now. So we need Congress to act. We need them to do their job. And that's really the problem. And it's a bit outside of the county supervisor's control, but it's something I will absolutely continue to advocate for. I will also say that we have approved at the board level something that is within our purview, the first master plan for aging in San Luis Obispo County history. That was because we got a grant and we worked with our community partners and now are implementing that plan. And one of the things we've been able to do is bring a new provider to the Five Cities area and Napomo as well. And that is Community Partners in Caring. And so for those of you seniors or folks with disabilities that need a ride to a medical appointment or groceries, I would really encourage you to reach out to Community Partners in Caring. And then those of you that have some free time and want to be a volunteer driver, they really need volunteer drivers. So please Google them and sign up. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
I forgot the question.
It's no problem. Isn't part of the issue with the lack of medical professionals based on the designation of SLO County as rural? Is there anything we can do to change that classification?
So, as a county supervisor and as a county, we could only do what we can do, right? I'm not running for Congress. And so the issue is how do we make medical care more affordable here? That's really the question. And what are the levers that the county can pull to make that happen? And again, as I started off in the beginning of my comments, it really revolves around housing. Can we make it easier for folks in the medical profession to live here? Can we make it easier to have workforce housing designated for people in the medical field? And that's really where the county effort should be and where it lies, in my view, as well as, speaking with the folks at Dignity and so forth and saying, okay, what can we do to make it easier for you to expand your services? All of them have foundations. All of them raise a lot of nonprofit money to help build the facilities. How can the county, where it's practical, partner with you in that, in making it easier, expediting those processes?
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Verdin, can you explain the process for fact-checking when creating campaign materials?
Yeah, I'll tell you exactly what it is. So here's my rule when we do a flyer. If I can't read every single sentence and say that it's truthful, we don't send it out. And it's that simple.
Mr. Paulding.
Now I want to be reminded of the rule of civility that we signed. So I'm going to say this very carefully. Were you wearing your reading glasses, sir? When we talk about campaign literature, I think it's really important that any candidate provide information that's factual to educate the public and to really encourage people to get out and vote. And that's what this is all about. This is our democratic process. And negative campaigning is kind of a thing of today, and it's really unfortunate. We see, social media just contributing to the polarization in this country, and it's incredibly problematic. I'm not sure what we're going to do about that as a society. But what we can do as candidates is engage in fair play and try to share information in our direct mailers, on our social media that is factual. And in this particular race, you're dealing with some disinformation regarding Prop 13, some disinformation around my vote on this battery storage project. Oh, wait, I didn't actually vote on it at all because it was approved by the Planning Commission and never appealed to the Board of Supervisors. Yet we have people who are willing to push misinformation in order to make people afraid. And that really is not the kind of demeanor that you want, the kind of character that you want in your candidate or in your county supervisor, and something that we should all pay attention to.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, what concerns do you have, about the current battery plant and or building others in the county?
Okay, before I get into the battery plant, I do want to just go back to desalination really quick. So go into desal, back to battery, desal. The reason we can't use Diablo Canyon, and people would know this if they showed up to our Grover Beach workshop last week, is that you can't build a subsurface intake there because it's a rocky surface, not a sand surface, because the Coastal Commission and other regulatory bodies require you to pull the water through sand to minimize environmental and marine impacts. So that's been ruled out of the county's feasibility study. Just wanted to highlight that. As it relates to, what was the question about? Oh, battery storage. Battery
and/or
storage.
Building others. Yeah. You want me to repeat it?
I got it. So on the battery storage plant in Nipomo, again, there's been a lot of dis and misinformation about that. This was a project that provides 100 megawatts of battery storage. It ties into a PG&E substation. It's part of what we need for the grid. I have been criticized as lying on Dave Congleton's show about my involvement in the project, but the facts and timeline are being manipulated. It was approved by the Planning Commission a year and a half later. The developer and applicant reached out to my office for help with the permitting process. I connected those dots, and it's being said that I somehow pushed the project through using those emails as evidence. Those emails that were with my staff related to something that was after the project was approved, not before. If I had a chance to vote on it, I would absolutely look at whether it is sited in a location that is appropriate. Again, not a single member of the public showed up at the Planning Commission meeting to object to the project. The project was never appealed to the Board of Supervisors. And so we really should be operating in an environment with facts, not with misinformation. Thank you.
Mr. Verdin, what concerns do you have about the current battery plant and or others in the county?
Okay, well, I'm going to go back to. So with regard to Diablo Canyon, I had a conference call with some folks at Diablo yesterday on that very issue, the one that he just brought up. And it, in fact, is feasible. The requirements that he's referring to is not applicable to them because of the date of their permitting. So that's actually not correct information that you just heard. Now, with respect to the battery plant, ask me the question again.
What concerns do you have about the current battery plant and or building others in the county?
Well, first was noticing. The reason no one showed up to talk about the battery plant is no one knew about it. That's actually true. The noticing was 300 feet. The person that got the notice was the guy across the street that sold the land to the battery plant operators. My other concern about the location of that battery plant, it's within 1,000 feet of Highway 101. If you have one of those boxes catch fire and you have a plume with prevailing wind, what happens to the 101? Where was that ever looked at? And then where's the water tanks out there? I mean, if you build a winery, you have a water tank. Hell, I'm on the board of Jack's Helping Hand, and we built a park, and we had to have a water tank. Who was watching the ball on this thing? And so I have concerns about it. And I'm not against battery plants, but they have to be done out in the open. They have to be in the right location, and they have to have the right level of adequacy or advocacy, and certainly the one in Nipomo did not.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, what do you have to say about the Paso Robles water basin and the chance that the South County taxpayers might have to pay for Paso's water fixes?
Well, I don't like that solution. Well, I will say that I think that there's one thing that's very important about the Paso Water Basin is to understand the magnitude of the problem. How do we understand the magnitude of the problem is the continuation of the insertion of more wells there. And then we have to think about water resiliency in the basin itself. You know, can we slow down the Salinas River and have more percolation in that? Can we have standing ponds, make it easier for people, landowners to have ponds to also capture some of that rainwater and percolate it? But in terms of governing the Paso Basin, you know, like any governments, we should do it as efficiently as possible and minimally as required.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, this is a really important issue because if you've tracked the long history of the Paso Basin groundwater issues, the overdraft, you know, at one point I remember 17,000 acre feet of water in overdraft each year. The fact is we have to balance the basin, and there is a plan to do that. That's the Groundwater Sustainability Plan. That's part of SGMA, the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act. And we've been working as a county to make sure that not only do we have a plan in place, but that we implement the actions in that plan to balance the basin. And that was a big shift on the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Arnold and Supervisor Pichong have voted against taking steps to implement that plan. And I fear that if Mr. Verdin here was on the board, we would see what they wanted, which was to continue to ensure that county taxpayers through the general fund pay for the cost of implementing all those actions, when the people using the water over the basin should be engaging in their fair share, should be paying their fair share of that cost. And so to hear that that you don't like that, sir, or maybe we could use ponds or percolation or this or that, really doesn't signal to the community, especially to the South County taxpayer, that you will support the existing regulatory framework that we are implementing right now, which will result in fees being charged on those basin users so they pay their fair share. And I hope that we can, you know, discuss and deliberate a little bit more on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, what is the current status of any proposals or studies exploring a new southern entrance to the Oceano Dunes, and do you support this idea?
Well, when we go back to 2019, the state parks, California State Parks, put together a plan called the Public Works Plan for the whole Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, and that plan contemplated a southern entrance to the Oceano Dunes complex. It also contemplated a motocross track and a shooting range next to Oso Flaco Lake, which is a beautiful burn sanctuary, a little bit problematic in my opinion. But if we look at this southern entrance idea, it just has so many flaws. Routing all of that traffic through Napomo, which our roads are not designed to withstand all of that traffic, the environmental impact related to the environmentally sensitive habitat area in and around the Phillips 66 site, there's a whole host of reasons why that doesn't make sense. And I will note that, I don't know if it was about a year ago, but my opponent was on the radio with Stu Jenkins. He was asked, do you support a southern entrance through Oso Flaco Lake? And he said, yes, you know, if it means keeping the whole riding area functioning. And then later in a Tribune forum, he changed his position. Mm-hmm. So can we rely on a consistent position? I'm not sure. The other thing is that on that issue, we need the whole issue of the Oceano Dunes. We need a supervisor who can vote on that as a land use matter. And because my opponent owns a business right down the street, I think there's a high probability he would have to recuse himself from all decisions related to that land use because it's a financial conflict of interest. So if you want a supervisor that will give you a voice on that issue, I would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
I'm not quite sure where to go there from there. So look, I think from a practical standpoint, if you're just looking at pure access, you know, the southern entrance makes a lot of sense. But as you start talking to people and you start understanding the environmental concerns, you say, hey, you know what? It's just too challenging to do that, too hard to do that. You would have to build infrastructure to it. You'd have to create maybe a commercial center there. And it doesn't make sense. And so I sure hope you appreciate somebody that changes positions based on facts and not just on what the political environment or the whims might be. So I don't support that. And then with regard to having a business on Pier Avenue, I think this might be the first time in my life I've been attacked for having a business. We have been in business now for 50 years there. We're very proud of it. We employ about over 50 people. We work very hard. And by the way, having a business on Pier Avenue isn't a panacea. There have been a number of businesses, maybe most of them, that have started out there on Pier Avenue that have gone out of business. So we view ourselves as a local business. We view ourselves as our customers or the people that live here. And yes, there's a bonus during the summer, but that isn't the main business. You all are our main business. And we work very hard to be partners in our community, do right by our community, contribute, and I think we contribute a lot.
Thank you. Shifting gears. Mr. Verdin, where should the county be investing more when it comes to basic services?
Well, I think planning and building is a significant one. I mean, again, I had three meetings today, three different stories, but all the same story. One was they were sitting in planning and building. Somebody came in. It was a Tuesday. They came in from Bakersfield. They own land here, a couple. I'm told English wasn't their first language. And they asked the person at the front desk, can we have some information on this land that we purchased? And they said, oh, sorry, we don't do appointments today. We do them on, I think it was, a couple other days in the week. And they said, well, we traveled from Bakersfield. So the person looks at the schedule, gives it a couple minutes, says, there's nothing I can do. They're, as they're there talking, not even understanding that question. So to me, is that person the issue? No, I don't think the person is the issue, but training is an issue. Culture is an issue. And so focusing on those things, and as I say, we work very hard, myself, my sister, my wife, and her business, to be partners in our community. I think there's room to grow for our county to be partners in the community as well. And understand that their job isn't to make your job harder. It's to help you figure out the system and work through it.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, first I want to say I was not attacking a business earlier, just merely highlighting the fact that as an elected official, when you serve the public, you have to make sure that you are not serving your own business interests, hence the rules around recusal related to conflicts of interest. When we talk about budget priorities, which is really what I heard in that question, I want to highlight how we have managed the budget and how we have promoted public safety. Shifting from two firefighters on each fire engine to three costs money, right? The benefit is that we can actually have three firefighters at a structure fire, which you can imagine, one holding the hose. I don't have to tell you the whole story. It's a lot better for your life and safety. When we talk about our sheriff substation in Napomo, that meant we made that a priority as opposed to something else. And overall, when we look at the fiscal challenges that the county has faced, and I've had to, lead in a time of fiscal restraint. We eliminated 155 positions from the payroll in the last budget cycle. We eliminated $35 million from the budget. And why did we do that? Because A, we want to be fiscally responsible, but B, we want to be able to free up resources. Most of those cuts were not, well, basically none of those cuts were in public safety. So we could then focus that additional money to public safety because that's my top priority. And if we're talking about what priorities are, I had the pleasure of attending a Slow Chamber of Commerce event yesterday where Mr. Verdin indicated that public safety was fifth on his priority list.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding. In regards to affordable housing, what does successful development actually look like?
Successful development on the affordable housing front really looks like infill development where we have multifamily homes, condos, duplexes, where we are facilitating more accessory dwelling units, where we are maximizing the utility of land, either vacant land or underutilized land within our urban areas. So here in the city of Arroyo Grande, when I was on the city council, we talked about Grand Avenue. Now, I know some of you might be here from Grover Beach and you may have concerns about the building heights. I too have some concerns about the building heights. But we talked about Grand Avenue. In particular, if we look at everything between Halcyon and Elm Street, there's a lot of opportunity to essentially make better use of that land for housing. Of course, it takes infrastructure investment. And that's where on the SLOCOG board, our Slow Council of Governments board, I was proud to help create a new program called the Community Betterments Program that freed up dollars to go directly to infrastructure investment. Think about Grand Avenue and Grover Beach, why it looks so nice, and what we're doing with the Halcyon Complete Streets Plan here in AG. And so it's those kind of decisions that we need to be making, those kind of priorities that we need to be setting in order to ensure, again, that we have the services, the facilities, and the infrastructure necessary to support growth. And in Napomo, we have a plan, a draft plan that's about ready to be released after 2 years of public workshops and community surveys that will actually chart a course along with funding mechanisms to improve, again, infrastructure services and facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdun.
You're going to have to repeat that for me.
No
again.
Problem. Yep. In regards to affordable housing, what does successful development actually look like?
I think it looks more like me than my opponent, because I would actually vote to make that happen. I've been working on that issue for a very long time. When People Self-Help Housing was looking for a headquarters, and they were looking for one for a very long time, it was my wife, my sister, and I that figured out a way of them being on the land that we owned for them to have that facility. When I joined the board of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and I learned how difficult it was to have a permanent warming center in our area because some of the neighbors didn't like it, we put it on our own property. And this year we're doing it largely at our own expense. And so I'm not, I actually don't have any experience spending your money solving these problems. I do have a little bit of experience spending my time and my money doing this. I just know it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort, a lot of communication, and having the guts to make votes that might not be popular in the moment. And I think I'm better equipped to do that than my opponent.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, how does the board have, does the board have any role in making homeowner insurance more affordable?
Well, the role there is on the fire safety issue and the fire maps and advocating for current maps. If you look at parts of Trilogy, parts of No Pomo, they're working on maps that were outdated. There was an opportunity, I think, in early January, mid-January, to advocate for changing those maps so that those folks' fire insurance would not be really erroneously high. In North County, the fire chief there, and I think one of the mayors, advocated for that, and they were largely successful. That advocacy didn't exist here in South County. So yes, for sure, there's a role to play.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Well, on the subject of advocacy on this issue in South County, I'll speak to the advocacy that I've engaged in. So it is correct that the state issued a set of high fire and very high fire severity zone maps that indicated things incorrectly. For example, in the Woodlands Trilogy development, you had homes put in the high and very high severity zones that shouldn't be, because the maps that were utilized showed forests and things that didn't exist anymore. And so what I did at the board level is advocated that we contact the state fire marshal first and try to change that. And then, because there was no appeal process for us locally, I met with our assembly member Greg Hart's office, who represents No Pomo, as well as Senator Monique Lamone's office, to try to get them to change it. And that's something that now is in the realm of state legislation. I've also been working with neighborhoods here in South County on what they can do proactively to make sure that they are rated as ideally as possible on their homeowners insurance. That is about becoming a FireWise community. And if you are interested in the things that you can do to harden your home, please do reach out to my office and I can share a lot of that information. I think it's incumbent upon all of us to do it because it's the right thing to do. I mean, just think about the Gifford fire. I'll share a quick story. I would say when we had the Gifford fire, that was probably one of the worst experiences as a county supervisor that I've experienced in my 3.5 years. The worry that WASNA residents could be impacted in a negative way. You know, the worry of friends that I knew out there that didn't actually want to come in and wanted to guard their homes. This fire safety is a real risk, and we need to continue to do these things that I mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, as a board of supervisor, do you know the importance of having our community 2-year colleges strive to become 4-year institutions, and is there anything you can do to support that?
Well, it is a matter that is within the purview of, in this case, Cuesta College is in Slo County, within the Board of Trustees' purview. And they do provide that program, and I think that's great. And that's a really key opportunity for students to then move on to Cal Poly, to move on to 4-year universities. And so I absolutely support it. I think that our partnerships with education are critical. And an example of a local partnership that my opponent likes to talk a lot about, and I'll actually give him some credit for, is the partnership that the County of San Luis Obispo forged with Lucy Amar to create a career technical education program that provides opportunities related to aviation for students. And there were folks that wanted to shut down our Oceano Airport, and I brought it to the board and I said, we need to adopt a resolution supporting this airport, and we also need to make it more of a community benefit, because those folks were right. It was not a community benefit. And that led to implementing programs, and I will give, the most credit to Courtney Johnson, our airports director, but with community members like Mr. Verdin, who are flight instructors, providing those classes to our students. And I think it's those kinds of partnership opportunities with education that we need to do more of at the county level, and I will certainly continue to do as I've done. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
Yeah, so in the Career Technical Education Program and the saving of the Oceano Airport, I'll just share with you, I'll be candid with you and share you the story. I met with Supervisor Paulding, had a cup of coffee. We talked about 3 different issues, one of which was the Oceano Airport. And one of the things I promised him and I told him, I said, listen, if you will support that airport, I will always commend you for doing that and supporting that airport in public. And so I commend him for doing that. So, but with respect to the career technical education program, the way that came to life was the opponents of the airport were saying that it's a piece of land in the middle of a community not connected to it. And after we won the fight to save the airport, I thought, you know what? They are right. So how do we go about doing that? So I researched it. About 100 high schools in the United States have aviation programs. Only about one in the, there's two now. But at that time, there was only one in Monterey County that was doing it. But the way that came, I think the important part of that story is the way that program was born was actually listening to the people you were disagreeing with on another issue. That's really what we need here in our community.
Thank you. Mr. Verdun, you're still on here. As part of building infrastructure, how would you address the need for more cell towers?
I haven't thought about cell towers, to tell you the truth. If there's somebody in here that wants to build a cell tower, and you want to do it in the right spot, we have to make it easier for you to do things in our community. I mean, that's just a basic premise of building or getting anything done here. Now, hopefully, my opponent doesn't now mischaracterize this and say I want cell towers in every foot of our land. So I'm just talking because I really don't know how to answer that question.
No, that's fine, Mr. Paulding.
Well, now that you've implicated me on that subject, I'll have to speak to that. Cell towers have to be sited in the right location. When I was a city council member on the AG City Council, we dealt with one over by Sunrise Terrace. It was a really bad location. Don't put it in residential neighborhoods directly adjacent to homes. That's a simple answer. We can use our zoning powers to make sure that they're sited in the right locations. As it relates to, this kind of contrast that you're seeing on housing, right, which is something I care very much about, but also something that I have a different value proposition on for you. And that is not taking money from real estate developers isn't about somehow saying that I don't value a partnership with the partnership with real estate developers. They are the ones that build the housing. But, you know, if you're taking $55,000 in campaign contributions, and in some cases double the contribution limit, and then having to give the money back because it was earmarked for a general election that one knows was never gonna happen, that's problematic, and that's what I've called attention to. And I don't have any concern raising that as an issue, because when we talk about projects like the Dana Reserve, which is one that I voted against, it would remove 3,000 native oak trees. It would add the population, increase the population in Napomo by 20%. My opponent wrote an op-ed saying support it. He talked about how it would lower water rates for folks, and we've seen water rates go up. He was parroting developer talking points, a developer that he used to work for, NKT Commercial, without disclosing that while he advocated for that project at the various meetings. I think those are things that voters should be aware of.
Mr. Paulding, there are many existing empty buildings. Do you have ideas on how to repurpose them versus new development?
Empty buildings sound good for housing, right? You take the city of San Luis Obispo and it's downtown. And we say, okay, well, there are a number of former corporate-owned buildings that should be repurposed. Well, it's a lot more challenging to do a tenant improvement. Think about it. We don't have the infrastructure for kitchens, for bathrooms, things like that, that really require a lot of additional cost. And so I will always be a proponent of maximizing underutilized space, and we should be doing that. But it's incumbent upon the person who owns the property. And I do support property rights and small businesses and what, you know, they want to do. And in many cases, it makes more sense to build somewhere else than it does to repurpose a commercial space. I think having said that, from a zoning standpoint, I actually supported changing our county zoning, the zones designated as commercial service, to allow housing in those zones. Previously, housing wasn't allowed in those zones, and that was a very tangible step in the right direction to actually increase the availability of land that could be used for multifamily housing. These are things that often don't get mentioned. In addition to the hundreds, literally hundreds of deed-restricted affordable housing units that have been planned and permitted for and built by People's Self-Help Housing and the Housing Authority of SLO because of the strong partnerships that we've forged at the County of San Luis Obispo level, including at one point, I advocated that we put about $2 million that we had in this housing fund and actually put it to good use, and we did.
Thank you. Mr. Verdun.
Yeah, I just want to answer that, or I just want to respond to this one thing here, and that is with regard to the Dana Reserve. So he said that that I wrote an op-ed that the build-out of the Dana Reserve would lower or help keep lower water rates low, and that's true. But here, the gentleman sitting next to me has a degree in regional planning, and he has to understand that that won't happen if the houses aren't built. Look, NAPOMO is required, the NCSD is required to purchase water, whether they use it or not. And the build out of the Dana Reserve and other housing there would then purchase that more expensive water and preserve rates for other people. Now, I don't know why he keeps repeating this, because this has been explained to him. As a matter of fact, once on social media, a member of the NCSD communicated to his campaign page and said, let's meet and talk about this. The response was they hid the page. They hid the response. Then they later unhid it, and they had a subsequent meeting. This was all explained to him. So why he's still dealing in this misinformation, I can't explain to you.
Thank you. Mr. Verdun. Do you support the billionaire's tax as written?
No, I don't.
Right?
I don't think what afflicts us as a state is that our taxes are too low. And incentivizing people to move out of the state, I don't think makes sense for us.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. So you said as written, which whoever wrote that question was very clever, because I have not seen the latest version of that. So I can't say whether or not I do or don't support it as written. In general, do I have a problem with those who are very wealthy paying their fair share? No. And I think that this actually implicates this broader discussion around those in our community who have a little more and those who have a little less. When we talk about building true workforce and affordable housing, and I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but it's going to be the topic of the day. I do feel that to be true, is that we need to build housing for those who are in need, not housing for folks that will retire and move to the County of San Luis Obispo and bring their Prop 19 benefits with them as well. And the reality is that when we only look at housing supply from the standpoint of let's just build, and we don't look at strategies and tactics to actually incentivize the kind of housing we need, like the Regional Housing Incentive Program that I helped lead the charge on and created at the County Board of Supervisors level, where we actually give incentives to developers that pay into that fund to build that housing, we're talking about the wrong problem. We might use the emotions related to, yes, we need the housing and it's a dire need, which it is, but we have to focus on the right type of housing.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding, in terms of priorities, what needs to come first? Water, infrastructure, roads, parks, schools, grocery stores, or daily services? And I'm happy to repeat that order.
I love the question. I'll just say public safety always comes first. All those things are important. And, you know, I get accused of not supporting our roads. In fact, my opponent has run quite an aggressive campaign trying to say that a change on a list of bullets on our board priorities reflects deprioritizing roads as a priority, and I want to clear the air on that. So we changed it from roads to storm recovery and infrastructure is commonly known to include roads, because of the $70 million worth of impacts to our roads and infrastructure from the cyclone bombs and atmospheric rivers of 2023. And this fact, the fact that we had to hire extra staff for our Public Works Department, that we've been repairing, you know, lots of bridges throughout SLO County, including, finally, the Chiquetti Bridge that we were able to fund with temporary funding, something my opponent also opposed when I advocated for temporary funding. The fact that we've been able to get these things done is a reflection of the fact that is a priority. It's a priority on the bullet list, and it's been a priority for me. And we have also been able to keep up with our maintenance of effort agreement to basically fund about $6 million worth of general fund towards our roads to ensure that we have paved our roads, which is a fundamental obligation of the county. And our roads, you know, there are a lot of improvements that we need to make, but they've been looking good. I think we paved over 200 miles just in the course of my term in South County.
Thank you. Mr. Verdun.
Well, so the county spends about $6.2 million in road maintenance a year. and it's been constant for the last 4 years. And so if you look at that and you look at the cost of construction and what's happened in that period of time, the cost of construction has gone up. And so with the amount of money being spent flat, so that actually represents a decrease, a net decrease every year in real money spent. If you compare it, say, to the city of Pismo Beach, the road maintenance budget there is about just north of $4 million, in city of Arroyo Grande, just north of $5 million. And so I think it's a fair criticism to say that it's not just that it's not on the bullet point, it's also not on the ledger in terms of the amount of money that we're spending on road maintenance as compared to other municipalities right next to us, and we have a lot more roads. One other thing that my opponent likes to say is the payment index has gone up, but if you actually look at the report underlying it, what it cites is funding from 2002-2003, funding from that period of time. It also cites acceptance into the county system of roads that were already very much improved, such as around Trilogy. So that brings that average road index up. But I think if you drive on our roads, I haven't heard anyone say we got awesome roads.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin, there's a citizens initiative that has been brewing, for lack of a better word, called Better Roads for All. And it proposed a half-cent sales tax to make San Luis Obispo County a self-help county for road projects. Would you support this?
So there's a citizens initiative that I just read in the paper coming here that had to stop their effort. So I think maybe the salient question on that is the SLOCOG initiative that's now the next thing coming around the corner. And so the way I look at that is, as I said, in more recent history, I've actually supported two taxes there in Oceano for the fire tax. And with regard to that half-cent tax, I mean, I just described that we need the money. We need the roads. I think if you drive on the roads, you say we need it. What I will say is this, and one thing I learned on that Oceano effort is it doesn't make any sense to support something and put it on a ballot if it doesn't have a reasonable chance of succeeding. So I would have to look at that polling information before I could answer the question. But in generally, I mean, I support Prop 13. Prop 13 means voters decide.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
I would counter that with, I'd have to look at that polling information as a lack of leadership on a serious issue. Now, I've been leading the charge at the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments level to make sure that voters have the choice on this issue. Because my opponent has said that our roads aren't in perfect condition. I never said that. I think that we've been moving the needle. We do have data, the pavement condition index, that says we're doing pretty good countywide and in District 4. But if we want to get serious about our roads and infrastructure, we need to ensure that the citizens have a choice over our quality of life. Do we want it to improve? Do we want to maintain it? Or do we want it to go in the wrong direction? Because you'll hear from my opponent that he wants to talk about prioritizing roads, prioritizing the Oceano Fire Station. You haven't heard a single idea for how he's going to pay for that. The reality is we live in a fiscal constrained environment. We're trying to do the best we can across the board. In my case, putting public safety first has meant a tough choice, and that tough choice has resulted in more firefighters on our fire engines. It has resulted in a sheriff's substation in Napomo that was identified as a need back in 1994. And so I would encourage you all to look seriously at the taxpayer safeguards that are included in this particular measure that you'll have the opportunity to vote on in November, including an independent citizens oversight commission, an annual report, and other things. We have to use facts, science, information to present the best decision for the voters to have a choice over your quality of life.
Thank you. We are at our final question. Mr. Paulding, what do you believe is San Luis Obispo County's greatest asset?
Our greatest asset are our people. That's an easy one. And of course, our land and our ocean and everything that we love about this community. Being born, raised, growing up in this community, being raised by not just my parents, and my mom's here. Thank you, Mom, for doing a pretty good job, I guess, with me. In the churches, raised by my pastors, our teachers, our business owners, this community is the community that I love. This is a community of good people. It's not easy to represent a divided community. We are literally a 50-50 split pretty much representing the national divide in America. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to run for this office. I was formerly, you know, a registered Republican, raised in a conservative Christian law enforcement family. I'm a registered Democrat. Do I have values that transcend both sides of the aisle? Absolutely. Do I want to represent and serve everybody in this community? You, the good people of South County and in Slo County? Absolutely. I don't care if you're a Republican, an independent, a Democrat. What I care about is that we provide high quality service as the County of San Luis Obispo for the people who pay for that service, and that's you. And, you know, I talked about how public service is ingrained in me. It's in my blood. It has not been a for-profit enterprise for me. You know, as I look at the past, working in private construction, working for construction management companies, my clients were public sector clients. And that's the kind of view that I bring to this job.
Thank you. Mr. Verdin.
I think the question was about you guys and what makes you guys awesome. And here's my experience living here. You know, I grew up here, as I say. I was mentored by people at a very young age, learning to fly airplanes. And some people were very generous with their time in mentoring me in a path that really wasn't available for a kid that grew up in Oceano at that time. We had a fire at our restaurant in 1991, 1992, where people just came in and helped clean up the restaurant. You know, I think of more recently Five Cities Homeless Coalition and the generosity of a lot of people in the business community that recognize that other people aren't doing as well as they are. And I think that our giving nature in our community, the ability to want to make the life of other people better, is really the beautiful thing about all of you and all of us.
Thank you. So we come to our closing comments. Each candidate has 3 minutes for their closing comments. And Mr. Verdin, you are going first.
Well, I hope that you see in the contrast that I am not a politician. I am a guy that grew up here, a small business owner. I've had rough times and I've had good times. And through it all, I've had the community that has lifted me up, and I'm very grateful for it. And that is why I'm running for office. I'm certainly not running for a job. I have plenty of jobs. I flew an airplane up to Sacramento and back this morning, and then I had 3 other meetings following that, and I'm telling you, I got plenty of work. But I think I owe it, and I have enormous amount of gratitude with that, to be at a place where I feel like I can give back, I can make decisions that can benefit a larger swath of people. And those decisions are driven by what's right for our future, and not just what's right immediately politically. And I think that's a huge contrast, and that's why I'm running.
Thank you. Mr. Paulding.
Thank you. Well, it certainly has been a pleasure to be here with you tonight. Thank you to all of you, even those of you that are here not to support me, for coming tonight. And again, thank you to the League of Women Voters and the Rotary Clubs for making this happen. It is about coming together as a community, about learning about the issues, and about our vision for Slo County. And I hope that I've made a case to you that I've been working hard for 3.5 years to deliver results for South County, but also ensuring that we are working on regional issues as well. Homelessness is a big example. It crosses jurisdictional boundaries. It isn't just in one city or one incorporated area. A 42% reduction. Those are the kind of things that we want to see, and I hope to continue to deliver for you. Ultimately, this particular election is a choice. It is a contrast. And I think what you've seen tonight is that I have experience and skills and abilities, even just the idea of spending 3.5 years in county government to understand it, to immerse myself in it, to make sure that I'm as the chair of the board, leading the county. That is a set of skills and experience that one has to learn, even if they have a business background. And I want to continue to use that for good, to advance the progress that we've made, to continue to move the needle. And I hope that I can count on your support. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So now it's time to clap for our candidates. We so appreciate your participating tonight, But more importantly, we so appreciate your willingness to run for office and serve, because it's very difficult. And thank you for taking the time and interest in our county. It's also the time to say thank you to the Rotary Club and the League of Women Voters for their help, and AGP, always, for your wonderful streaming. Please don't forget to visit vote411.org for some help and guidance in your voting. And remember, Election Day is June 2nd. You've been a great audience, so thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.